Welcome to Haldane's Law Matters. Thank you. So today's guest is Patrick Yearn, and I have to tell you, I learned a lot about Patrick at around 4 o'clock a.m. this morning. When Patrick, I opened your long curriculum vitae, and I knew you had a distinguished career, but I had no idea that it's a bit like Gone with the Wind.
Do you really think so?
Well, I thought it was an extensive and illustrious career, and we're going to have time to dip into some of the aspects of it today, with your permission.
You're more than welcome.
So can I just give, by way of an overview introduction, which will be inadequate, I know, that you have a history of M&A. Now, given that it's Haldane's Law Matters, and we want to tie it in with something legal, M&A in this instance is not mergers and acquisitions.
Well, you can see it that way.
It's music and aviation.
Well, that also can be a different interpretation of what M&A stands for.
We may even find a third one. Let's have a go. Here we go. I know you were born in Hong Kong, and I'm going to ask you a little bit about your childhood in due course. And I know that you've had, for example, a short career in early days in shipping, and then Swire has been a major part of your life. But if you'll forgive me for being not chronological, but actually coming right up to date, and we'll work backwards, can I just mention that, of course, at the moment, you are CEO of the Hong Kong General Chamber of Commerce, correct?
Absolutely.
And that struck me as being a very important post, particularly in a world in Hong Kong at the moment that's a bit topsy-turvy. Mm. Can you tell us a little bit to start with, first of all, how you became involved with the Chamber of Commerce, how you ended up running it, and what your visions are for it?
Mm. Well, the Hong Kong General Chamber of Commerce is the oldest established chamber in Hong Kong. It first started in 1861, and just named two of the founding members are Jardines and Standard Chartered Bank. So obviously Hong Kong became a British colony after the Nanjing Treaty, and so there are a lot of British merchant activities there. So after 163 years, our chamber is still very much influential and having an important position in Hong Kong, always advocating that we are the voice of business. So how did I get involved with the chamber? I actually retired in 2017. And after 6 long years of basically not engaging myself in any full-time job, the opportunity suddenly arise. I originally planned to work for another 3 years after my retirement from Swire, but that opportunity never turned up.
Nobody offered you a job, Patrick.
Maybe they offer, and I'm not up to what they expected for. Okay, I'm not good for what they are looking for. Right. But in any way, so nothing really in terms of full-time job. Yeah. But I still engage myself with various activities like teaching at the School of Hospitality and Tourism Management at the Polytechnic University, some in-net jobs, and keep on my amateur hobbies of singing, etc. So the opportunity came last year when my predecessor, George Leung, a very renowned economist and a long-term veteran with HSBC, retired. So the position opened, and Guy Bradley, who is the current chairman of Swire, thought of my name after 60 years.
Yes.
So I might have done something wrong, something right, that he remembers the name.
Yes.
So he put up my name for the chamber to consider. So that's how it all started. So my whole life, as you earlier alluded to, was basically with Swire. So I thought that if Swire, the current chairman, thought of me, then at least I have to very politely to accept the nomination and go through the process. So the rest is history.
It would have been rude to refuse. Can I just take something that I got off the internet, the way you see the role of the Chamber of Commerce at the moment? I read this morning, actually. I was busy this morning with your affairs.
Mm-hmm.
To reinforce Hong Kong's role as a superconductor and bridge between the world and mainland China. Was that accurate off the internet?
By and large, yes. As a chamber, as I said earlier, we are the voice of business of Hong Kong. Close to 4,000 members, they're from all walks of life. So we are kind of the miniature of the business of Hong Kong. We've got 50% of the blue chip listed companies, our members. We've got 100 of the Fortune 500 are members. We also got about 17% of our members are multinational corporations. And no doubt, SMEs are a very important, big part of our chambers. So we are kind of like the miniature, reflecting the economy situation in Hong Kong. So Hong Kong is going through the very challenging times. And as the voice of business, we want to continue to put forward their sensible proposals, suggestions, recommendations to the government to consider how, in policy-wise, the government can help to make the whole business world better.
Does the government listen?
Well, it depends on whether you got sensible the suggestions and proposal. If it is nonsense, then I don't think any government will listen to. Just like the chief executive came to our chamber yesterday, and we relied on that to present our 2024 the policy address submission. We're focusing on a couple of the key directions supported by, as I said, sensible recommendations.
Can you share those with us?
You can go to our website with very full details. So we have a limited time. I don't want to take it as a policy address submission.
Right. Okay.
But basically, we want the government to look at how to really the difficult time to have measures to help the SMEs.
Yes.
We know that the government is not there as a charity organization, but it's time that they probably need some government directions. And then secondly, we're also looking at how to revitalize the Hong Kong economy through the various developments, in particular the new economy involving the application of technology, whereas AI or other areas that will make Hong Kong to transform through the very traditional successful business like transport, trade, logistics, finance, etc. We should make good use of our experiences and also the wealth and that we have accumulated, built over the last many decades to bridge over to this new economy.
Are we developing AI or is it more a question of using it within the economy?
In terms of technology, there are two main streams. One is from zero to one, that is creating something from nothing. And the other big stream is from one to N, that is making use of available technology to use your creativity, to use your knowledge, to use your experience, to turn it into something that will increase the possibility of the product being sold. And if we're talking about AI, just the one that you quoted, mainland China is actually, in terms of number of patents of AI in the world, is number one. And they have been successfully making use of AI to really develop into many, many other products. So I think Hong Kong can ride on this success of one plus N, both using the experiences that Hong Kong accumulated in the past, plus the available technology to transform Hong Kong, not only digitize the businesses, but making use of digitalization to transform the business so that we will be able to rhyme with the trend on the worldwide basis. And also, I think the government have put up proposals, policies, and including the Northern Metropolis, where the lot of major focuses are actually on how to make use of technology and the land that Hong Kong have to transform Hong Kong into a better future.
Sounds good. Now, if the chamber has any influence, could you please nudge the legal profession? Or at least the judiciary.
Well, I must say, we have a lot of professional services members in our chamber. And we have committees that cover legal, finance, etc. I agree with you that a lot of things in Hong Kong need to, not to say that overhaul, but actually look into it, whether it's already outdated in terms of the sort of a policy perspective, or whether there are laws that need to be introduced so that we'll be cope with the development of this new economy.
Well, my own feeling as a lawyer is that the legal profession, the judiciary in particular, needs to get really up to date with using technology, because otherwise we fall behind other jurisdictions that are using it extensively.
Well, Hong Kong's importance is obviously a one country, two system, of which the system that Hong Kong is having is a capitalism. And the rule of law is definitely the very key cornerstone. But on top of that, I kind of agree more that while we're keeping the good traditions, we need to find ways to make it more efficient, make it more communicable in a way in today's world's really chaotic sometimes with all these arcane and outdated law.
Well, laws are a service to the population, the business and individuals, and we need to serve them with efficiency. So there is a technical park in Hong Kong, isn't there? It's up in the Sha Tin area. Is that vibrant or is it a technical park without much going on?
Talk about Sha Tin as an area, one of the districts of Hong Kong.
Yes.
Well, you probably read the news that ANF, Accor Company and Fringe, is returning and they will have their megastore, one of the more, I'm afraid I'm not allowed to advertise for other people, but they are coming back. You probably also remember they used to be in the center of the city, in Central and Palace Street. very bold advertising and all that. But they move out. But now they are coming back. So
let's catch that theme because in the last few years, as you know, there has been a move out. I mean, there is a population flow out, and equally there is a population flow coming in as well. A lot of people have left for England, Canada, Singapore. Do you in the chamber see a reversal in that? Are we beginning to pick up again?
People left in the last couple of years, many are due to the COVID restrictions, which Hong Kong is one of the strongest in terms of making sure that Hong Kong major population base will be safe and healthy. But that also brought in the inconvenience to many. Many people decide to leave Hong Kong. But from what we understand, we have not done the sort of full-fledged survey, but from we understand from our members and from our conversation with other people, we are seeing people coming back from all sorts of countries, whether it's from Japan, Singapore, and the UK. So if you look at the number of companies registered in Hong Kong, the Americans used to be on top of the list of foreign companies, about 2,000 companies. But I think the Japanese have taken over, generally to be the number one in terms of foreign company registered in Hong Kong. So you may say, oh, they used to have employed 10 expatriates when they set up a company there back to the 1890s, but probably only now down to one or two. Or
because of the AI.
AI, all those. So I see that people do come and go, but as I said, looking at the figures, it seems that people are coming back, and also the number of foreign companies registered in Hong Kong are also on the increase rather than on the decrease.
I don't know if you agree, Patrick, but after 46 years here, I find it's one of these cities you can actually sort of sense, you can smell, and you walk through it, you know whether it's going down or up in its energy levels. I get the sense that it's springtime in Hong Kong, it's a little bit of growth.
I actually agree to what you observe, but this spring is not everywhere, unfortunately.
No.
It becomes a bit more polarization. Causeway Bay, the SoGo area, used to be crowded. But if you go on Sundays these days, you hardly see that many people, which to some are good because no traffic jam, is more smooth, etc. But if you go over the harbour, let's say to the K11 Museum, there are a lot of people, there are crowds. So I think polarization can be the current status. But obviously, we could hope to see more of the K11 spreading over to other districts.
Yeah.
And we spoke earlier about ANF returning and anchored Sha Tin. So they must have good reason of choosing the location.
Yes.
Either the rent is more attractive or because of the better infrastructure of the railway system that Hong Kong has connected to Greater Bay Area than the mainland, that there will be more mainlanders coming through via Sha Tin to do shopping. So I think, yes, spring is here, but it may be a longer spring than usual that people mentioned.
Patrick, I agree. Although I must say, I was walking to meet some people for dinner last night along Wyndham Street and then Hollywood Road. And I observed that it was a bit more like the old days because hospitality, of course, has taken a terrible drumming. But it seemed to have a sort of spring in its step.
Last night, maybe it's because of the Fashion Week.
Ah, I see.
A lot of overseas buyers here. There are fantastic fashion shows. They staged this Hong Kong famous designer, Robert Wood, at the Palace Museum. Fantastic. Hong Kong is this kind of metropolis that should have all these mega events to allure the international, the visitors, buyers to come here.
Absolutely. Patrick, you're ahead of me. I didn't know there was a
Fashion Week.
Fashion Week in Hong Kong.
Golden Fine Out and Convention Center.
Good to hear. So that's what you're doing now. Can I just circle back? Because the reason you're in the chamber or leading it, I think, is because of your history. You've got an extraordinary history, frankly. And it's so diverse in the regions that you have worked in. And I mentioned that you started out with, I think it was shipping, wasn't it?
Yes.
In the very early days.
Swire Shipping.
That was after you were at university here.
Yes, right after graduation.
What did you graduate here?
I graduated from the University of Hong Kong.
Yep.
I received a Bachelor of Social Science degree, which basically covers most of the business subjects.
All right. And that led you to your first job in shipping. But that was a short-lived, I think, wasn't it?
Well, when I first joined Swire, I did not specifically join an industry. Swire is a big conglomerate, and they had a very comprehensive management training program. So the program I joined, the name they put it up there then was called Floating Executive Training Program. It's a three-year program, and during that 3 years, you are supposed to do at least two business divisions, operations. So after the third year, they will decide, or you decide whether you want to become a permanent staff of the group.
And what drew you to Swaz? You chose them.
I chose them because they pay one of the highest among others. I remember my salary then was 3,000 Hong Kong dollars.
Oh, not bad.
In 1980. So that compared to majority of the jobs, it's about a 30% premium. So this is the number one driver. Secondly, I don't really know what I want to do. And so I come in rescue with all 3 years of continue exploring my interests, which I think is good. I have absolutely no idea. And like some of my classmates, they are so fixed on becoming an O, administrative grade officer of the government. Some very much into the finance because the 80s actually saw the financial industry taking off. I wasn't one of those. I don't really know, like many of the young people these days, want to do that. So Swai, as I said, came in quite timely in offering.
They saved you, Patrick.
They saved me.
They saved you. So let's just run through some of the cities you've worked in. I think Manila, was it the People's Revolution going on at the time? Tell us a little bit about that.
That was in 1986.
Uh-huh. To Viswai?
I was born, raised in Hong Kong and never really have gone overseas. So this is really my first overseas experience in terms of long stay. So as the junior to the manager, it's a role that allowed the individual to experience a little bit of managerial work and also gain some overseas experience. I was then working for Cathay Pacific. And I was the first Chinese Mandarin trainee being sent to Manila, the Philippines.
All right. And did you see the revolution unfold?
Well, you'll be amazed to know that on the first day of my actual work, it was the day when the People Revolution broke out.
You didn't cause it, did you?
I hope I wasn't causing anything. I was with my manager, only two people in the office on that day. And that day, we were supposed to settle a very big legal suitcase. We're being sued by one of the government officials for illegally downgrading or offloading him. I mean, it's paid a big sum. So that was on a date, very vivid in my mind.
All right, would be. And then from there, you traveled next in your work to, was it Singapore?
No, I actually went back to Hong Kong I took up the sales job for the Hong Kong office before I moved down to Singapore to run Singapore as a country in 1993.
How long were you in Singapore?
Wow, this was quite a long stay. I stayed there for 4.5 years. I know the Singapore then a bit. It was also the time when Singapore economy started to take off because of commercial real estate. You know, Hong Kong has been very vibrant, but Singapore, 80% of the people are living in the government housing.
Sleepy.
But in the early 90s, they started to take off with commercial real estate. So good to see the development.
Yeah. Obviously, this rivalry always between Hong Kong and Singapore. If you're looking at it today, how do you see the two cities?
I wouldn't say it's a rival. There's always things that we can learn from each other. Singapore and Hong Kong were both once a British colony, and Hong Kong extended the becoming colony a bit longer than Singapore because Singapore got independence back into 1965. So I guess there are a lot of the things that in common is that people are very hardworking. The difference may be the Singapore got a very early adopted social welfare system for the Singaporeans, like the mandatory the provident fund and all that. Hong Kong adopted it a bit later on. And we are both a metropolis. Singapore is a country, Hong Kong is a special region. We don't really have much resources. We don't have natural resources. We don't have a domestic market. But if you look at aviation, which I spent quite a bit of time in career, the fated national carrier resources, Cathay Pacific is Hong Kong, and then Singapore Airlines for Singapore, both are doing very well on the sort of worldwide recognitions, positioning, etc., and they're winning a lot of the awards. So if you look at a country without a domestic market, without resources, but the National Cathay and Singapore Airlines, both doing very well. So that must be something that have made the two, Singapore and Hong Kong, in a way that they see and doing the right things in that helping the developed economy through aviation.
Good to know. And then, of course, Beijing?
Beijing, yes, that was fantastic. I was lucky that I became the first general manager to look after China. It's a new region. After Cathay acquired Dragonair, that's where the M comes in, the major acquisition.
I see, okay.
So the Cathay invested $8.8 billion to acquire Dragonair, Well, Cathay was one of the shareholders of Dragonair before this acquisition became successful. There were other shareholders like the CNAC, the Air China as well, and also CITIC. But Cathay brought them all out.
So you were right at the heart of the transition.
Yes, I started to run this new region, which is very interesting and challenging in a way, because Cathay's office is much bigger than Dragonair, size-wise, revenue-wise, network-wise.
Yeah.
But Dragonair has the forte and strength of China expert, because over this 20-plus years, Dragonair has built themselves as the expert of China. And at that time, Dragonair had 21 points covering the mainland.
And it won an award, I think, or two.
Oh, best regional airline.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the point is, Cathay is big, but Dragonair is big in China. So this is Dragonair being acquired by Cathay, but Dragonair is more the expert. And they got a much bigger team, about five people up in China, whereas Cathay only limited operation to the Beijing and Shanghai, and only a handful of employees. So that is an interesting part from a sort of a cultural alignment between Dragonair and Cathay, on top of the challenge of building up the revenue they're using the two airlines.
Interesting times for you and for the airline. Tell me, I think you're Taipei as well.
Well, I'm so lucky. This Liang An San Di. I work not only in born here in Hong Kong, but work in Beijing. But luckily, got a chance also to experience Taiwan through my last posting with Cathay, to look after Taiwan and Korea. So you could see some similarities, some differences. It's good to compare notes of Hong Kong, Taiwan, and the mainland through my stay in Beijing.
Yeah, I think it's tremendous. And if you were trying to sum up in a paragraph or two, Beijing, Hong Kong, Taipei, and perhaps Singapore as well. Is there a way you could distill that, or is it beyond distilling?
If you from a civilization and cultural standpoint, no doubt Taiwan got the almost continuous, nonstop Chinese civilization, despite they were under the Japanese ruling for about 50 years. But if you look at it from a more macro standpoint, much of the Japanese civilization and culture were adopted from Tang Dynasty, including Zen Buddhism, and how Kyoto was built, actually modeled after the Chang'an. So there are some traditional Chinese culture assimilated into the Japanese, but also there's a part of the Chinese. So from a very broad perspective, Chinese civilization never really stopped Taiwan. There are some very traditional Chinese civilizations that we still can find in Taiwan, but not in the mainland. Because China got the People's Republic of China established in 1949, and some of the traditions have lost through those years. So Hong Kong is also unique in the sense that we got the so-called best of East and West. We were a British colony for a long time, 150 years. And with that, we learned a lot of things of the West through the British system. But we also inherently, our DNA is Chinese. So I think Hong Kong is unique in the sense that we've got a very long history of being a colonial city metropolis, which helped us to really to work very pragmatically on business. Even though we mentioned about no resources, we try to make good use of the harbor that we have, the very fantastic harbor for trade, and then being geographically positioned so centrally located in Asia here, if not the whole world. Within the 4 hours flight, you cover 75% of the world population. So all these make Hong Kong into a very important connector, a hub. So from businesses, from trade, and then later on aviation. So all these things make Hong Kong so unique. Singapore is in many ways similar to Hong Kong. But I think in terms of the geographic location, you can't dispute that Hong Kong is only 3 hours flight to Beijing. Singapore needs 6 hours. And Hong Kong can do nonstop to New York without payload. But Singapore, they have to some payload restrictions because geographically, you really cannot reach New York with full load capacity, etc. So I think we all, the cities and the countries, the metropolis just mentioned, we all have our different strengths and obviously the weaknesses to go with this. But to see how one can really make good use of it to blend in with what you really try to do at the current point in time. It's no point just reflecting back to history, we are so good in this, that. We have to look forward, but don't forget about history and experience.
listening to you, Patrick, reminds me of a CEO that regrettably is no longer alive, but I remember him saying to me, "Don't worry, as long as the fat from the big goose keeps splashing into Hong Kong, we should be just fine."
But no complacent.
No, not complacent, but it was a lovely line. I've always remembered it. It's many years ago.
It's Norman, there must be.
Yeah. So there we are. You've traveled all these places and you've given us an insight into what's going on in the region and how you see Hong Kong, and it's an optimistic look. But just for a moment, for those that say, look, the stock market in the last 10 years in Hong Kong is actually no higher, I think, than 10 years ago, roughly speaking, and no big city, no major city can thrive for long with a property market that's down. Now, there are those that think that the Hong Kong property market is permanently hurt by the events of the last few years and that it's unlikely to recover any time soon, that it will actually blend in price-wise with southern China, with Shenzhen. But for those that say that's the pessimistic outlook, what would you say to that?
Being a financial metropolis successor one, the stock market is only one of the indicators. Obviously, the stock market affects almost everybody. For those who put up investment, buying stocks, which is very easy and accessible for any people in the street, its ups and downs really draws attention of everyone. But you look at London, you look at Tokyo, you're in New York, how much do they really talk about IPO as a international important financial centers? The financial market coverage as a spectrum is so wild. As an IPO is definitely the stock market is an important integral part, but it's not everything. Look at the wealth and riches of Hong Kong, which ranked number 3 on the worldwide scaling. And looking at the wealth management that Hong Kong is doing, there are a lot of all these international financing that is not on the sort of C2C, the more B2B, C. And that's why, yes, the IPO, the stock market has been lacking in the last couple of years, can understandable. But they are not stopping Hong Kong from continue to make good use of what Hong Kong has developed as a financial center, to continue to look into not only the wealth management I mentioned, but also into the new economy of all these coin and blockchain and e-currency and green bonds. And Hong Kong is the biggest green bond issuers out of Asia here, account for about 65% of the total. So you could see that those are not the normal people in the street can see. But for those who are working in the industry, they will know the potential and the importance of it. And also the insurance industry as a growing segment and making a lot of the good progress through the policies that Hong Kong. So unfortunately, the stock market in terms of the Hang Seng Index have not reached new highs. But many people have made a lot of money in the rise of it in the last 2 decades or so. So
property?
Property, like you said, there's no city in the world, no record that all the property would have gone all the way up without adjustment, etc. With the removal of the double stamp duties and the man-made restrictive measures, the market actually have responded a little bit of it. But then later on, the expectation of interest rate dropping and the geopolitical tensions do not come in a more favorable and positive way. So I think people are a bit more cautious of should I be investing right now? Should I wait until the interest rate come further down? I think all those counts why people are not going to it. Another observation is the talent scheme that the government has introduced about 2 years ago have been proven very successful. There are a lot of talents coming to Hong Kong. And like many of those who are first time to Hong Kong, they may just want to understand the city by living here. Instead of buying, they probably put themselves up in the rental apartment.
And so apparently
rental has gone up.
They're
and
strong.
There's a high demand for it. So I think that is always this correlation. When rental rent up is good, the selling of flats may be a little bit adjusted. So I think in the long run, the real estate market will still be good because you're seeing more people coming back, not just the talents, but there are a lot of other schemes that will train more people, plus the returning from overseas to work in Hong Kong. So I am cautiously optimistic of the real estate market. You
know. I like optimism. Now, music.
Ah, M&A.
M&A. Music. Now, I know how important music is in your life. And Puccini is one of your Top of the pops?
Well, music, again, like financial market, is have a big spectrum. It could be the instrument playing. It could be the singing. It could be classical. It could be pop. I have to thank my mom for the DNA of my enjoying music, because she's amateur enjoying a Cantonese opera since young. So I think it runs in the family that we got the DNA. And secondly, nurturing through education is important. I went to St. Paul's School Education College, which back to the 60s, 70s, the very few that focused on the music education. But our principal then, the Dr. Kochwar, very well-respected education. She believes that everybody should learn some music. So being a co-ed school, we got choir that have both male part and female parts. We don't have to borrow the school's support from that. It's all within. And we all have to learn an instrument. So not every student will be able to afford private tuition back in the 70s. But the school also provide flexibility and assistance. They got group lessons, and then you pay only a fraction of what you pay for a private lesson. This kind of cultivation or the environment, the ambience of the school is very much towards nurturing the music, not as a career, but more as a hobby to develop yourself into a better person, if I say that. So I learned through my music, not through but participate in the choir.
Did you play an instrument?
I played a violin.
You still play it?
I still have my violin.
You have it? Okay. All right. Now, but we can't let you go without you mentioning your annual recitals, which are really famous among some circles. Huh?
It's very kind of you to make note of that. When I turned 60, I want to do something. So I want to raise some funds for people through my singing. But then I found out it was so difficult. So I ended up without doing any charity, but just make use of music to connect with the friends and people, colleagues that I know of in my 37 years with Swa. So I started my music tour back to the Philippines, so Manila, and then Bangkok, Singapore, Taipei, and Beijing, obviously the Hong Kong, my home. So I held six recitals throughout the whole year because I can't do one on my birthday month. So I had six recitals, photo recitals of myself from 2016 to 2017. And since then, every year I applied through the LCSD for a venue at the City Hall Theater.
Yes.
And make use of that to connect with my friends. Music is universal language. So many people are very happy that they haven't seen each other for a long time, but they ended up seeing each other at my little recital.
So it brings people together.
It's not about how good or bad I sing. It's more providing the connecting of value to the people I've known over the years.
So at the City Hall, it's guests that attend.
It's actually a free concert. I invite my friends.
You invite your friends.
Instead of putting up for the ubiquitous to the sell my day.
Yes. And I've actually attended one, and I think
they
are pretty well sold out, I think. They're well attended. It's a wonderful event.
Well, thanks also.
And you mentioned you can't have a recital on your birthday. Is that a superstition or something else?
Not really. This system is very good because you apply for the public government venues, and you cannot say, I want this day, I don't want that day.
I see.
Because they have to cater for all genres and all different applications. So luckily, if the day that you requested, that you have the only one that they apply for, you may get it. But normally, that's not the case. So it depends on the availability.
The government elects what it has.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right. Are you going to do one this year?
do you really want to know? Well, I want to keep it as an ongoing.
You're thinking about it, yes?
I definitely will have one.
All right, good.
Keep the tradition, and singing is something that can help you to be more healthy because of the breathing. It's like a qigong, you know?
Yeah, like qigong. Excellent, excellent. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your experience, which is a long experience right across Asia, largely with Swire. And so your knowledge of Swire and the aviation industry in different cities, and then your singing makes you a very unique person. Thank you for sharing.
Well,
your
you mentioned, I think I should have mentioned some of the opportunities.
To do,
which
please.
I have not.
Yeah.
To end the exchanges and the dialogue. This year is actually the centenary, the celebration of Puccini's death. And in my planned recital, yes, I'm going to rendit some Puccini arias. And I want to end this podcast by sharing with you this Puccini's very successful opera, which is also the last one he composed, Turandot. You might have watched it before. And in Turandot, the setting is actually in Beijing or somewhere in China. And that is about a very cold-hearted princess wanting to find his true love. And for those who fail to answer the riddles that she put out, the one who's going to be killed, slaughtered, beheaded. So this very brave prince managed to solve all the three riddles of put up by the princess. And the really answer everything is about love. Love is what we all wanted. Love is make this world a much better place, probably living in a more harmonious way. And the most famous aria of this opera is Nessun Dorma,
of course,
which means no one sleeps. So no one sleeps, why? Because everybody is trying to help the princess to find out who this prince is, what is his name. This prince, Caliph, he sang this lovely tune, Nessun Dorma, which ended with Vincerò, Vincerò, and Vincerò in Italian, which means victory, victory, victory. So with love, victory will eventually be the trophy and the prize for everything. So I hope the Vincerò will be for Hong Kong in this transformation from the old to the new economy, facing all these challenges. Eventually, we together with love, we can pass it through and become strong again with victory.
Patrick Young, there's no better ending to a podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.